A very good morning to you. This is the Monday edition of Down to Brass Tacks. You can reach us at 4341790. You can send a WhatsApp message to 266-4862, 266-IVOB, or you can send an email to brasstacks@starcomnetwork.net. Michelle Braffett is taking care of things technical. I'm Dennis Johnson, I'm your host, and I will be with you until 2 o'clock this afternoon. I want to start by extending my condolences to the family, friends, colleagues of Mary Rose. I met her many years ago when I worked in the hospitality industry. Almost delicate lady, impeccable manners, great personality, always quiet, confident, and efficient. I think, poster girl for how to quietly make your presence felt and to execute your whatever you're required to do quietly, but with dignity and sense of purpose. Rest in peace, Mary. A rose will always blossom wherever the conditions are right. The other thing I want to touch briefly on is the challenge faced by persons in retirement in having their pensions paid in a reasonable time so that they can organize their lives. I think it is unfortunate that those who have worked and should be enjoying their golden years will find themselves facing challenges, not because they have not prepared, but because those who are responsible for administering their preparations are negligent. Employers who don't pay their contributions and then are forgiven their debts. To those who, for whatever reason, if something goes wrong, will wait until they're asked or the person is in dire straits to respond. I got a letter just as I left the Brass Tacks program the last time I did it. And when I get a chance during the course of the morning, I'm going to read it to you because it's fairly detailed, but it clearly outlines another of the challenges faced by our aging population. The third thing I want to touch briefly on, and very briefly, is the question of how we plan to do what we do. And maybe I'm nitpicking, but I was kind of amused, or bemused might be the correct word, when I looked at the front page of the Sunday Sun and saw an artist's impression of the Fairchild Street Market, and it said construction to start soon. According to the article, the new facility will have 115 kiosks and a butcher's block, an open area with a stage for live entertainment, like the one at Oystin's, and each kiosk will have running water and electricity. So far, so good. Impressed. There'll be separate washrooms. I'm further impressed. The bouncer, there'll be 39 parking spaces. You see a problem yet? This is Dr. Brass Tacks. Good morning.
Good morning, Dennis.
Good morning, sir. What were you laughing at?
I laugh to see that I label you on my moderators.
No, that's all right. I'm always left out, sir.
I have to apologize.
I am always left out. I am choice number 90.
But you know that was a mistake. And it is being corrected this morning.
It is?
No.
Yes, sir.
Let me say this. Mm-hmm. I want to touch on a very serious note this morning, a very serious topic. Mm-hmm. Education and the scholarships that are being given out. I have no quarry scholarships. But before I go there, I said before I went to the wildlife and I happened to take up interest in the life of the flying fish. You remember I made mention?
Yes, and you talked about it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Being difficulty being, of flying fish.
Yeah, correct. And being other people's
when
food.
He's in the water, the big fish run him out of the water. He fly up in the air, the birds take him out. And then the fishermen take him.
Now, we eat him.
I want to deal with what we call pre-education in the first place. And as you know, it was mainly in the older secondary school at the time that fees were being paid before the new secondary school. Where I went at the newer secondary school. Now, this scholarship is supposed to be for the newer secondary school. Now, let me look at the life of the small man, because they said that the reason for removing the payments to the older secondary school was to allow the poor person that could not afford to pay to get into the older secondary school. You remember that argument?
Once they had the ability to do so, yes.
Exactly. Now, since that this scholarship, I call it, I am not trying to be difficult, but this scholarship to me, I only speaking about me, and as I said, I don't listen to politicians to go over what they say. I choose my own judgment because I feel I am capable enough, like any other politician who are just a human being like you and I, Dennis. Now, this scholarship put me in many different ways. Now, the poor man, child especially, who have the ability, fight to get in at Harrison College or Queen's College by his ability, as you may have mentioned. Mm-hmm. Now, and then because that he gone at that school, suppose that child now want to do what the scholarship is being offered, like aviation. Because every child that gone there are not academically geared, but they gone there because of the system. You mean because you are bright and you're able to get into Queen's College or one in schools, you are no debarred from receiving a scholarship to doing aviation?
No, I don't think you should be.
It should not be. That is what I am saying about discriminatory, right?
But because does it discriminate against somebody who wants to do that?
Because my child may have gone to Harrison College.
Yes.
But his intention to do it is yes, and he was glad to get this scholarship because he can't pay.
Yeah, I mean, but anything else, for example, I mean, okay, you selected aviation. Suppose he wants to do, mechanical engineering. Suppose he wants to do something that is beneficial. He want to learn how to build submarines. But why do you say it's discriminating? Does it say that if you want to do aviation, you can't get?
But they said these scholarships. I said, I am not able to pay.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, this culture is afforded.
To those who can pay? That's what you're saying?
But that is, no, not only to do that. The school.
Oh, the schools that they're available to. Okay, I got you.
Right. Yeah, he is at Harrison College, but he can't pay.
Mm-hmm.
But it is only limited to those at the newer secondary school.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I said discriminatory come in.
Well, so you see, now let me say this before you go on. Right? You see, sometimes when you try to correct what you see as an imbalance, you have to be very careful that you don't overbalance. Because I am sure you would recall a Minister of Transport and Works
making a comment
about, you know, writing past injustices.
Right in the wrongs, yeah.
And the person who didn't get the contract also got paid. So sometimes when you try to correct what you think is an imbalance, you overbalance.
Exactly.
Let me see if we look at it in a constructive way, right?
Mm.
One should be able to determine, based on budgetary constraints, availability of funds, and more importantly to me, the requirements for your development, to be able to say, we will set aside $2 million for this, $2 million for that, $2 million for that. So that in each category, you would find that people who are, you would have a, you know, eligible to get the scholarship, whether they're new, old, private institution, whatever. It depends on the ability of the child, the circumstances of their parents, and whether or not what they want to do is crucial to your development. I don't see why you can't set that type of criteria as opposed to simply saying, you know, X school or Y school, new school or old school, because I think that is discriminating. And as far as I'm aware, the Constitution says the government should not discriminate. You and I can, but the government not supposed to. So from that point, yeah.
Yeah, the other point is that you would know that the the option of what I would say the child aims at when it's between 10 and 11.
Mm-hmm.
Because you want to show how are the exam there left to him to prove how his ability is to get it academically into those older secondary schools.
Mm-hmm.
But now we got to look at the other point now. That's what I say when people talk. You got to look back and see where they're coming from. Now, let us look at 11 plus. We're having a lot of arguments in this country about whether the 11 plus should be abolished.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you abolish the 11 plus, how come now that you are going to decide to take these scholarships and give to a certain school?
You would abolish that too.
Newer secondary school, you're actually confusing the whole system.
No, perhaps you're trying to jumpstart the new system by saying, let's make it available to all and sundry as opposed to only what you consider to be the older or the elite school. I think it's an attempt to remove what people consider to be elitism, but it is difficult to remove from people's minds what they've come up with. So if, let's say I'm 62, but let's say I'm between the ages of 50 and 60. And from my youth and childhood, I was being pressured into getting as high mark as possible so I could get into a good school or a top school or elite school, or, you know, you could rub shoulders with the white people so you see how they live, whatever our parents told us. It is so ingrained in us, especially if we have not moved economically, that we tell our children the same thing. Whether or not our children want to do it, that's what we tell them. Go and learn. So, you know, you could get into X school or Y school because I can't pay for you. So, you know, tell them that. Yeah, so we're the ones who put in the pressure, you know.
Yeah, last but not least.
Uh-huh.
I listened to, I can't recall the doctor name was addressing one of these secondary schools on education sometime this week, last week. And he said the system, the educational system, is not working. It is not good enough for the pupils. Now, you could imagine a doctor who got his accreditation from the old system can come before pupils and tell them that the educational system ain't working when he receives a doctorate under the old system. Now, I want him to explain to the public if it would be right to squash the accreditation that he got as a doctorate on the old system, because I don't think a doctor with the old system criticizing the new one and still holding the doctorate. I don't know. It is confusing, and I left that there. That's for you to deal with.
All right, sir. I will try to deal with it in this way. Criticizing a system that you've used to your benefit is not necessarily a bad thing. It means that having used the system, you know what the flaws are, you know where the faults are, you were able to overcome them either through your ability or your ability to manipulate the system. So having looked at it and determined that it's not fair because you know how you manipulated it, then if you've acquired the knowledge to make it better for somebody else, then go ahead and do so. I always point to one of the Soviet leaders that I read a lot of, who claimed the Soviet system and then dismantled it with glasnost and perestroika, a fellow with the red birthmark on his face. He remained a member of the Soviet system. He went on to lead one of the breakaway republics, but he dismantled the system because he knew how he got up to the top, and I suppose he didn't want anyone else to use the same methods. So he broke it apart. It happens. We discriminate every day, though. In our choices, good and bad, we determine whether we want white bread or wheat, whether we want a tall girl or a short one, or fluffy one or a slender one. Yeah, it's discrimination. You pick and choose. Brass Tax, good morning. 4341790. Good morning.
Good morning, Brother D. How are you doing this morning?
I am all right, sir. And you?
No, I got two little things I want to discuss here this morning. The first one first. Mm-hmm. There's a well here in Leinster Road, Waterford, that 2 years ago when the drainage unit went, they measured the stuff and then calculated how deep the well is. They said it was 11 feet of stuff wanted cleaning. That was 2-3 years ago. Well, I had to do some work, putting up some fencing thing, and I would like the drainage people to either come and clean it or come and see what is blocking the stuff from sucking water. The water's overflowed. Somebody got 2 feet of water in my yard, which is not good enough. That is one.
Mm-hmm.
I spoke to them already, and they responded. They didn't call me back, but I relentless in this one because I want to say fixed. My next point is I saw the leader of the Democratic Labour Party in the newspaper indicating how hard things were, how hard things is on the people. It's a possibility that it might be so. But we are seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. 10 years we were complaining and nothing was happening. In my opinion, what I feel she should do is try to get people to run against the candidates that the Barbers Labour Party have and stop complaining, get your people in, get your party line up to run in the next general election. Thank you, sir.
All right, sir. I think that may be a little bit easier said than done, but I can come back to that after this next call, because the lines are wide open, so let's see what this caller wants to talk about. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Hi, Mr. Johnson.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I just called because I heard one of your callers talking about education.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, in every argument, there are two sides, eh?
Three, actually, but yeah.
I mean,
I was being funny. I know.
Yeah, well, the point about this, you must recognize that in this country, we have some very poor people who are not able to send their children to private lessons like some of the other richer ones who get into Harrison College and so on. You also know there's some very poor people who did not themselves have a good education, are not able to influence what their children want to aspire to. Let's say, for example, you went to Harrison College and your wife went to Harrison College. You would obviously try from early to inspire your child to go to Harrison College. Now, you take somebody else in St. Joseph, the father is a cane cutter and the mother is a maid or something, and they're just struggling to make ends meet. They would like the children to do these things, but they don't know how to get through to the children as you might be able to get through to yours to inspire them. So these are things that should be taken into account. And we should not then say, well, hey, you should not make provision for the kids from schools that don't have as good a reputation or good tutors as the newer secondary schools, and say, well, they can't aspire to these things. Because you may get a student who, after he gets into a school situation and has become acclimatized and start to read about what he can aspire to, he may develop at a later stage. But then, he being at a newer secondary school, he has that strike against him. He doesn't get the quality of teaching. He doesn't have the reputation of the school behind him. And all the advantages that the other child, say at Harrison College, will be getting, and be even interacting with other students who aspire to things, he doesn't have that, and therefore he may not have the opportunity. So I would ask that we carefully think and don't be too critical of the present plans, because I have seen kids who came from very poor backgrounds, their circumstances, children who seem to be struggling at school because they were just getting enough to eat, for example. And then they didn't get an opportunity, and then we say, well, they're no good because, look, they went to a near secondary school. I just put that on the table. I don't know if you agree with me. But
well, sir, the problem, unfortunately for me, and I really want to say this, because of my peculiar circumstances, I do not share most of the blinkered thinking that goes with education in Barbados. My first experience with secondary school was in Grenada, where my mother, who all she did was sew clothes for $5 and $10, and who, if she made $100 a month, she was wealthy, could not send me to secondary school unless I got a scholarship. In other words, that government would pay to send me to a secondary school. So therefore, I applied myself and ended up getting a 99.8% average, which was the highest mark at the time. So I got into a secondary school. She chose a Catholic secondary school because she was a Catholic, as opposed to the other secondary school. I had to leave that school in Form 3 and come to Barbados to get into a secondary school to continue my education. That didn't last too long. I ended up going to Trinidad to get into a secondary school where I had to pay $600 a month to go to that secondary school. Now, I have never said where I went to school because each of those schools, when I left school and I asked for a recommendation, which is what you do at that time, the first one said I didn't go there for my full life, so they ain't responsible for where I am. The second one said I wasn't in it long enough, so they can't say anything about me. And the third one said I only spent a year there, they ain't responsible for where I am. So none of the three schools I went to wanted to own me. So I don't talk about new, old, grammar, upper, middle, nothing school, as just ignore this school talk. But having lived in those three countries, here's why I found out. In Trinidad and Tobago, right? In Trinidad and Tobago, if you went to a composite school or a junior secondary school or one of those schools that government set up in a depressed area to try to get children off the street, you were discriminated against. You were looked at and expected not to do as good as those who went to Fatima and CIC and the established Catholic schools at the time, or St. Augustine Girls. In Barbados, if you didn't go to Harrison College or Combermere or, you know, the older secondary schools, at one point it was Lodge too, because Lodge was a paying school. The newer schools had, somehow you were of less ability, that's why you ended up there. And St. George Secondary had things thrown at it, St. Lucie Secondary, my child ain't going all there. But if you look at what has happened over a period of time, you've seen the emergence of Foundation, St. Michael's School, others have come to the fore as being places of quality education, Dighton Griffith, for example. So the whole question that people continue to hold on to, the Harrison College, Queen's College, old school theories, resonate more with a mature population than with the institution itself, because over a period of time, the quality of education at some of the so-called more established schools have suffered. People call the program all the time and ask, when last Combermere got a scholarship? And they make these type of comments because of their affiliations to those schools and what they knew they were capable of turning out 30 or 40 years ago. Education has changed, and the quality of teaching has changed, the quality of the intake has changed, and the urbanization and the various things that have taken place in Barbados has changed the type of student that you get at any secondary school. So, of course, the caliber of person that comes out of that school will change. How we deal with the change is another question.
Yeah, you see, though, Mr. Johnson, when having said all that, we still have to establish centers of excellence in any society. We are not all...
I agree. Totally agree.
The second thing is, what is left out of all of this discussion? I don't hear any mention being made in this country about manpower planning. So therefore, right. Attell likes to be called lawyer this and lawyer that, and they go off and they do law. And then they come out and they can't find enough work, so they take people's money or get involved in, well, the CMA and the politics or something like that. We need to gear our educational system to the needs of the country or the, where we want to take the country. I have a great belief. There's a great opportunity now in alternative energy, which is not being embraced. It's being talked about, but it's not really being embraced. Because why, in a day when each householder has electricity potential generated on his rooftop, why should we still have these structures, the old structures, where you have one big company or two or three big companies dominating industry and no one make an attempt to do that. Because I feel we should be turning out young men and women who are in the electrical or electronics field, who are capable of making these installations for the average householder, so that you don't have these monopolies developing and many, many people who cannot get work because they have not got the training. So you do your manpower training to where you focus your government to go. And these are the things that we have to look at. And I feel any sensible government would at some time take pause and figure, well, hey, you know, this the tourism thing, there's a limit to this, because tourism puts a lot of strain on your culture. It puts a lot of strain on your facilities, like your roads, and all the other things that go along with tourism. And you know, at some time, we cannot have a monosector economy. You must diversify. So therefore, you have your plan for education geared to your manpower needs, and your manpower needs geared to where you want to take the country forward. So that's my little
thing. Well, let me say this to you as well. I agree with most of what you've said. There are two things that I'd like to add to it. One of them is the question of financing. We talk a lot about alternative energy, giving children an opportunity to expand and, you know, become proficient at whatever they want to. But if they want to set up a business, if they want to operate a business, they need financing, they need accounting services, they need a place from which to operate. And if we don't provide them with that, if it's not easily available, if the only way they can practice their craft is to become subsumed into a larger organization, then that sense of independence and entrepreneurship and all the other things we talk about go flying out the window. That's one point. The other thing is becoming reliable, starting a clientele, developing relationships with people, and letting your reputation grow is something we don't allow or people to do with any great ease. The third thing, and this is the one that I always smile at, it is what we consider to be urgent at the time that we talk about. You talk about alternative energy. This country, through the program of the BCC and some very, very good people there, turn out musicians of the highest quality in Barbados. Top-notch, world-class musicians in this country. What is their road to bringing the wealth of their talent to the benefit of themselves and their country under our present system? Dr. Stefan Walcott, all these guys, 1688 Ensemble. Anywhere else in the world, they would be in demand. They'd be paid for their services. They'd be able to live. We have guys who set up studios, recording technicians. This country used to have four or five, I could call off the top of my head, top-notch places where advertisements were recorded. Grey Lizard, Lohar. I could go through all of them because I've worked with most of them. And trust me, they made me sound much better than I was. And they used to be paid for their services. What's happened to the advertising industry in Barbados? How many of them are still at work? And how many of them get work? How many of them can support and send their children to school based on their talent? We have guys who went overseas and learned masters in engineering. I'm talking about studio engineering. To do what? So when we talk about making our people self-reliant and expanding their capabilities, when we build 9-story hotels and 15-story hotels, and whether we put it on the beach or we put it in the center of the city, and the people that we plan to attract to come to those hotels can't listen to the quality of the Bajan musician because we make no place available for them to perform therein. We put them out in the newly developed Fairchild Street Market or the amphitheater of the post office where we consider to be low class and the seating is on concrete.
Yeah, but
we're not allowing them to grow, sir. And that's my concern.
Yeah, with this manpower planning that I was talking about, we have a whole bunch of mechanics who do the traditional internal combustion. How many are they retraining to when the new cars come in, the electric cars, and that's they're coming whether we like it or not, although we're making no attempt to introduce them to Barbados. This is the time that we should be training kids to take the new opportunities. As I said, now even in the terms of solar panels and things of that nature, the installation of those things, even in Barbados, we have kids who have the potential to design their and make their inverters. I mean, we can develop an industry. So there are a lot of things that could come along, but you have to look at what is where you want to go, and you train people, gear people towards these things. Right now, I don't see any serious attempt at this manpower planning at all to take advantage of the new technologies that are certainly going to come.
Yeah. Okay, sir. I thank you. This is Dr. Brass Stacks. 4341790 Brass Stacks, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Johnson. How are you, sir?
I am fine, and you?
Happy New Year, man. Your voice comes through here, man. Gold, man. Somewhere nice.
I hope it stays that way.
But I let me thank, first of all, as a matter of election, Lucy Barry, always say Lucy, the Gallon Committee do a very good job for the Alabama celebration of 100 years, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, there too. I would like to see, I see a good job going over the bushing. But what does the bushing do all through the year, right? Because it clean up, got the nice and thing. And I think you said something last week. This has really come to my attention. The old grand they put on there could be a museum. Let me start by here long day and see now. I can see one of the two grievances for the gallows. I can scarcely see the gallows now. There the burrow section is, now the bus is going through there. So then they come to St. Michael, I heard you say, they got a prison there, they mark up money. You got to feed a prison over $1,000 a year. And up there, Glendary, I passed the other St. Philip, and I asked a friend of mine, the cattle boys, the supervisors, get the prisoners to do work and things up there, you know? But years gone by, the prisoners, and in those days, they had prisoners to scale red bar, right, with trustees.
Mm-hmm.
They would clean all the back of the prison, all the skills, every morning.
I saw an article, I think, in the newspaper, and I did notice it passing across Bridge Road that some of the residents there started to try to clean up the area. I think it is, Glendary is having the opportunity to tour Glendary after the fire. It was the first time I've been in there and the last time I've been in there, thankfully. The prison itself is of historic importance.
Mr. Jones.
And, people go to see Alcatraz and they get locked in cells and, you know, they come back out and people go to visit where Mandela was and touch the wall. So, you know, I won't ask anybody to try to scale the wall like a certain prisoner did, but perhaps if a few people saw the gallows,
I heard it
in operation, the fear of the gallows may wake them up one night from their slumber. I don't know.
All my years living above, I used to hear the gallows.
You used to hear it?
Matter of fact, Glendary, over 100 people, I was trying to get home there, right? I used to stand above, go up in the morning, hear when the truck goes fly, one morning came out, there had a few people there, watch the gallows. So then people talk, deter it. I got a tour in there.
And you'll be deterred?
I want to see the gallows. I got a tour in the last tour I had there, right? That people are all done by power up going home to go in.
Yeah.
I mean, at the same time, we got the very good here. You see, like, basically, all the bad criminals, the hall, all that places.
Mm-hmm.
And she has a little small cell. And,
mm-hmm.
and then he took me up to the gallows and think, I said, well, well. I said, I would like to see. They take the same gallows down there, put a bag of sample on it and trade it out, tear some of these fellas down there and see, little seat, I'll put it on TV and see where they go to.
Don't put it on TV. I want them to actually listen. So there are some people who can't even. There's some people who say they're claustrophobic. They can't stand small spaces. Uh-huh. If you go into one of those cells in Glendary, I haven't been to the one in St. Philip.
Right.
I did go to the temporary one in St. Lucie when it was up there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Uh-huh. But when you go into one of the cells in Glendary, if you put three people in one of those cells, right,
uh-huh.
and close the door and turn off the lights at night, and you hear the gallows fly.
Yeah.
I I don't think you'll come out the same person somehow. Somehow, I think you will be altered in some way. I think you'll be altered in some way. Maybe a life altering experience. I don't know. You went down into the gallows? You're a very brave man. Okay.
Now three coffins are in there. You understand me? So I got a choice. I stand in Singapore. I go and say for myself. And even show me the bag, I'm going to be the bag upside down thing. So you get me dead when you live. So all the people said it's not the terror and all that thing. I want to see you go back to my years and stop. Because you got people that dress up as nonsense. We got the prisons on there. My friend, you let me keep my square in your grave. Because he just had a good thing going at the old prisons on there. Mm-hmm. All the walls were above his head, drove and things. Now we got all that land up there, so now, in St. Philip there. And we got people that somebody told me money to go out spamming them. Right? Anyhow, Mr. Johnson, nice hearing you.
Good hearing you too, sir. Take care. Look, people talk about deterrence. I don't think you could ever decide what is a deterrent, because there's some things that would scare some people and it wouldn't matter to others. But capital punishment, the taking of people's lives, was supposed to be punishment for the crime. That's what it's supposed to be. This deterrent thing is like icing on the cake. You can have the cake without the icing. You know, so if it deters people, fine. But it's supposed to be the punishment, supposed to fit the crime. What has happened over a period of time is that the rights of individuals, whether they are convicted of a crime or not, has become so much in focus that every argument for the preservation of life has come forward. And unfortunately, in the entire process, the pain, the suffering, and the ongoing agony of those who have suffered a loss has faded into the background. And that is the unfortunate part of the way we view this whole process of criminal justice. We look at the conditions that cause the person to do what they do, and sometimes that's not the reason they did it. But that's what the textbooks say, you know, is the reason they did it. So they cling to it. And, you know, anyway, it's the system we have until we change it. Brass Stacks, good morning. Hello. 4341790. Brass Stacks, good morning.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
I'm on.
Yes, you are.
Okay, thank you. Oh, I'm going to be short because I don't want to be too long.
Okay.
Neither am I trying to put you on the spot, but you live in Trinidad and you live in Grenada and you live in Barbados.
Mm-hmm. You can put me on the spot if you want to. I've been down before.
How would you rate the mentality of the people that you move among in those three countries?
It's determined by the conditions under which you grew up, and I'll tell you why I say that. Trinidad and Tobago, for example, is a multicultural society. So they had to adjust to Indian labor influx, Chinese influx, the original peoples of the Caribbean. The Caribs were still a part of their culture and their expression. So there was a tolerance for other cultures in Trinidad and Tobago that I have not seen reflected in the other Caribbean islands I've worked and lived in. I've worked in several of them. One. Two, the laid-back attitude of Trinidadians came from the fact that there were ways to express themselves culturally that allowed them to free up some of the frustrations that other countries felt. Plus, there were different avenues for wealth creation. Now, it led to corruption in some areas, but in Grenada almost every decade had an upheaval. In the 1950s, Gary came back from Aruba and started a trade union and burnt all the sugar fields to get better conditions for the workers. It was called Sky Red. In the 1960s, there was Squandermania. The government was debunked. In the 1970s, the Black Power Revolution, the lead up to independence, 1980s, the revolution. You see, almost every 10 years, there was a disruption. So again, the attitude of the people to hardships, the attitude of the people to excesses in governments and the shifting of social norms was commonplace. Barbados has had a fairly settled type of existence from colonization of the British, British alone, till independence in 1966. The plantation system in Barbados, where you had land to rent, for example, which was not a practice in the other countries I lived in. Trinidad had squatting, Barbados is not. You could rent plantation land. So you had the plantation houses on one side, the people of wealth, and on the other side, the average Barbadian had his little chattel house. It was his castle. He was quite content to stay there until it could grow. And there was something called being content with your lot in life that led to what people call the passive nature of Barbadians. That was not replicated in the other Caribbean islands that I lived in. They were aggressive. They were in your face. And they were accustomed to upheavals.
Thanks for the short education.
that's my view from sitting in the hot seat, sir.
Now, I joined the calling program late. Mm-hmm. I was during the process of the early discussion about the education system.
Mm-hmm.
And it bothers me quite a lot. Because, you might wonder why I asked you the question.
Yeah.
I think after 52 years, we have not yet really moved very far. Intellectually, that is. I'm zeroing in on the discussion we had earlier.
Mm-hmm.
I find that we still hold on to this nonsense about where we went to school, and you have people with one foot in the grave and the other one dragging closely behind, and on their right or left hand you find a school band saying where they went to school.
Mm-hmm. And so it's called belonging. It's a sense of belonging.
It is stupid. Over the years, these people have not employed anybody, made any substantial contribution to the ones that claim that were not so intelligent to have made it where they went. So therefore, you have these groups, people touching your shoulder and ask you went to school. Very, very annoying. They have not employed anybody to make a difference, a social difference in this country. That's where you have the us and them kind of mentality. Mm-hmm. Some of them were bold enough to come out and say, look, that's nonsense, right? You know, it didn't make sense because what we're doing is perpetuating colonial prejudices and wallowing in credentialism, that type of thing. And I find that's why I asked you the question at first, but because I think that we have not, all the education we were exposed to, we seem to have missed the mark as to the purpose of this education. You get the levels of what you have, and you rush into the government service and sit down there for 29 and 30 and 40 years and come out and boast about where you went to school. But who's creating the employment? The Syrians, the Lebanese, the Indians. And you go into Swan Street and say, body there in a shop or something, and we're spending money with these people. I'm not xenophobic, eh?
I know, you're not picking on them. That's their way.
No.
So, but you see, look, let me go back to the Trinidad experience for a little bit here, because I've used it a lot here when I talk to my colleagues and the one or two people that I talk to. In Trinidad, for example, one of the things that struck me when I went in my teenage years, when I was younger, I didn't pick those things up, but in my teenage years, I lived across the road from a Chinese laundry and two Chinese restaurants, okay? And here's what I noticed. The young Chinese, those within the ages of 25 and 35, had jobs. They worked in the bank. They worked in various places. You know where they were every weekend? In their family business, washing clothes and cooking in the kitchen and saying yes, sir, no, sir, to some 90-year-old people who could barely hold themselves up. But in there, they were not the bank manager. They were serving you across the counter because of their sense of family and tradition and upbringing. And it's indoctrinated in them. So when I hear people talking about, oh, the Singapore model, and look at what's happening here, the people of Asian descent have indoctrinated into serving your elders and your family. It's ingrained in them. That's why people who do karate bow to their sensei, because he is their elder. And it is that drives their development, not anything else.
Exactly. You mentioned earlier something to do with music or something.
Yeah,
like that.
The musicians we created, yeah.
Right. Thanks. You know, remember that?
Yes.
You know, you made that. You gave that some grip, for want of a better word.
Okay.
You know what you're talking about?
Yes, I know what you're talking about. So I remember it well.
By Boo Husbands.
Boo, yeah.
You the minute you play that song,
Chimborazo, that's what it's called.
I said to myself,
the tribute to
you. It was the best thing I've heard in a long time, locally produced.
Mm-hmm.
And there are several others that I'm hoping that you would look at from time to time and give it some grip. You know, I'm not prejudiced about as a music, huh? But all I'm asking you to do, since you're so aware and so much, seems to be so in tune with what we need around here to make us feel proud to be a people, I'm commissioning you, if you ask me, to not to.
Well, it may be late to do that, sir, but let me thank you for doing it. Let me tell you.
How late is it?
So, according to OCM, unless they change the laws, you got to leave this company by 65, and I'm 63, so I ain't got that much time.
Okay.
I ain't got that much time. I had from 94, and I tried my best, and you know, ran into some dead ends. But so look, I take your point, and I'll say this to you. Right? It is unfortunate that we have created what I called some culturally impoverished people and empowered them to use the airwaves to create their own aura and their own power. If you have people who are culturally unaware of, you know, things around them, then they will grasp whatever is popular at the moment and go with it. There are very few people in radio today who see radio as a means of communicating with people on every level, not only by speech, but with music, how you select it and how you play it. They're more into personalities and cult.